Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. This hour, we're airing highlights from our February Get Lit with All of It virtual book club event. Our February selection was Black Book, a novel that satirizes the racism faced by people of color working at startups and in corporate culture at large. We here at Get Lit like to put our books in real-life context, so we were thrilled to speak with someone who has a lot of experience navigating prejudice with startup culture and within Silicon Valley. Thomas McLeod is the founder and former CEO of Omni, a startup that functions as a kind of Airbnb, but for storing stuff you can't fit in your apartment or renting out someone else's stuff. Before that, he worked in iPhone app creation and development. Now he is an investor with Saltwater and chief content officer at Coil. I first spoke with Thomas, who is a light-skinned black man, on a panel for The Atlantic about Silicon Valley's diversity problem, so I knew he had a lot to say on this particular subject. I began our conversation at Get Lit by asking about a topic that he's been open about in the past, the fact that people don't always know that he's black. I wanted to know what were some of the conversations he was able to overhear in the workplace from people who might be speaking more freely about race in front of him than they would have otherwise.
There's a couple things. So one of it is like the type of diversity that is actually commonplace is not necessarily like black American male, but there's a large amount of Indian engineers and people of that nature. And so a lot of times people assume I'm an Indian engineer. So I hear comments about that and what does that look like? And then in sort of more rooms around venture capital and other stuff, when people are talking bluntly about diversity, you know, it's a little different than you see in the tweet. You know, sometimes it's just sort of like, well, how are we going to find more black folks? You know, it's like you start to hear these very specific tones that are significantly softened with people's public images. And I would say they're delivered with a bit more frustration sometimes in the fact that they have to do this, not necessarily realizing the overt value that almost every single study has shown that building a better business long-term has diversity of thought, diversity of culture, diversity of gender, diversity of all these different things. And I'm often sitting there being like, maybe we shouldn't look at this as a problem, but look at this as an opportunity. And then sort of being like, and I'm black.
And I'm black. So what are some things that you've learned about the way racism is expressed in startup culture?
You know, it's definitely this culture fit idea. It's definitely this pipeline problem. There's just a lot of words that soften it that feel like businessy platitudes, I think is probably where we'd end up there, that surface by trying to utilize data as this overwhelming, like, data is the way we make decisions, and the data is what we call the answers and how we decide how we're going to build these products. But people don't take into account that the data is biased. People assume that the data they're getting is just the facts. But in reality, it's who did you ask? Who is the sample side? Who is the network that you originally reached out to when you sent them the beta of your product? Who are you asking for more feedback? What does the team that's running your data look like? Are your bankers all white? Like there's so many places here that I think it sort of becomes similar to the overarching national systemic issues. It is this kind of way where it's like, well, if the data told us to do this, then we would do it. But the data isn't telling this. And people aren't paying attention to the biases baked into the system a lot of times.
There's this quote in the book when Rhett, who is Buck's boss, is, you know, they're talking about diversity and inclusion. And he says to him, "Race isn't popular, Buck. It's a dirty word, but diversity isn't. Everyone's talking about it. And the more people talk about it, the more attention it'll bring to whoever's leading the charge."
Sure.
Which made me think about virtue signaling. And it seems like there's a lot of that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. You know, it's hard to say we do not have enough black engineers. That's a very hard thing to put in a tweet. That's a hard thing to put in a shareholder report. But it is a lot easier to say we have started working hard on increasing the diversity of our product team. That can be interpreted in so many ways that if the improvements are very small, or if the improvements that you're targeting aren't declared directly, you can kind of keep putting that in there for years. You can keep saying, well, we've made strides. We've been working on these things. But if you said something like, we don't hire enough Black engineers, and 2 years later, you still haven't hired any Black engineers, it's pretty hard to walk it back. And so I think most people like to give themselves the widest berth possible with the communications that they put out around diversity broadly. That isn't changing, because like PR and the polish is actually increasing around how people speak, not decreasing. There's more massaging of words before they go out. So
what is one thing, if you could shift one thing in Silicon Valley that you think could have a true impact on bringing in different kind of people into positions where there's opportunity for growth? What's one thing that could be done?
We are location biased. So expanding just where we are looking, and that's for customers, that is for early adopters of what you're working on, that is for where we are looking at putting venture capital and funds into. Largely the historic statement, and I did this, I was told when in 2011, hey, you should leave DC and move to San Francisco and like play in the big leagues. And I did it, and it worked out well for me, but that's a weird choice that I left a significantly Blacker city and had to move to an unquestionably whiter population, certainly in the caste system of San Francisco, to succeed. And it's because you don't get as many shots on goal, you don't get the same ability to fail fast, and you have to work sort of double. So I think being able to see capital, time, energy, look outside is going to change a lot. And that's not saying that the Bay Area is going to stop being the center point, but I do think you're going to see potentially a positive of some of the pandemic things will just be a lot of people have gotten used to pitching from their bedrooms, or pitching from places that they weren't able to put a suit on, or weren't able to carry a briefcase, or weren't able to get on a plane and fly to to a venture capitalist's office in Palo Alto. And that's going to change things, because people are still finding great deals. Turns out that they're all over the place, and they might be, they might look differently. So I think there's a big opportunity there.
I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but once you got to be the boss and be in charge, what were some of the things that you did? Maybe you did them naturally, maybe you did them quite purposely to make sure that all kinds of folks were represented.
Yeah. So I think there's two sides when you're in that position. So one is, who do you let invest? So, I attempted to have as many Black, Brown, Latino, Latinx individuals invest in the company as possible. That was like really important for me. Because I think the only way to sort of create real wealth historically in America is investments. So it's like, it's almost as important to let people who are working on that side, if you think you have a big idea, get the opportunity to then do that more often, because they are going to write those checks more frequently into people that look similar. So that was one that was on just the building side. And then on the actual like running of the operation side, I mean, we just kind of blind hired. Like, I think that was just the first thing. I think the pipeline problem is kind of it's a myth. The problem isn't the pipeline. The problem is that like you are the filters that you're using before the pipe enters the building are removing your opportunities. So, we were just casting wide nets, blind LinkedIn searches, pinging the broader network. Who do you know? And that's how we were making our hires. I think that led to certainly increased gender diversity. That was very obvious at the company from the beginning. And then in terms of racial diversity, it continued to grow and expand as the company got larger. I found with Omni, which I no longer run, but I found that Omni specifically had sort of a two-sided business. So we had people who drove vans, vehicles that were on this operation side. And then we had sort of a product computer work group of people. And for me, one of the number one things we could do was have a clear path for how do you go from the warehouse to the office? And we did that, 7-8 probably 10 times in a company that was 100 people. People ended up going on to customer support or into product management. And to me, that's the other opportunity. If you have a company that naturally has people that start at one spot, make sure there's a path for growth. Don't just be like, start at the bottom and stay at the bottom. No. Like Amazon could have literally probably hundreds of thousands of Black executives if they thought of the warehouse team as a growth channel for hiring, right? So like, let's do that.
Those were highlights from my conversation with tech founder and former CEO of Omni, Thomas McLeod, from our February Get Lit with All of It virtual book club event. We spoke to Thomas about prejudice and startup culture, a central theme to our February selection, Black Buck, by Matteo Ascarapore. Coming up next, my interview with Queens rapper Pharoah Monch and two special performances from his new rap rock fusion trio, 13. Stay with us.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.